Hello, welcome to Sun Sounds of Arizona. From Flagstaff, I'm your volunteer reader, Deborah McFadder, with excerpts from Yes Media, a nonprofit independent publisher of solutions journalism. Through rigorous reporting on the positive ways communities are responding to social problems and insightful commentary that sparks constructive discourse, Yes Media inspires people to build a more just, sustainable, and compassionate world. We start today in the news section with an article, Newly Naturalized and Ready to Vote, first published October 30th, 2024, and written by Lourdes Medrano. A color photograph shows a gentleman in a blue blazer and a white button-up dress shirt. He has salt and pepper gray hair and a little bit of a mustache. He's smiling very largely, and his eyes are even crinkling. He's holding a little American flag in one hand and his naturalization papers in the other. His name is Gaston Garcia, and he had just gone through a ceremony of naturalization at the U.S. District Court in Tucson, Arizona. After 37 years of living in the United States, Gaston Garcia overcame anxiety over the naturalization process and became a citizen in Tucson, Arizona, in late September 2024. He has another milestone still ahead, voting for the first time. Wearing a dark blue suit and a broad smile, he walked out of his naturalization ceremony holding a small U.S. flag and his citizenship certificate. The timing was no coincidence. He aimed to become eligible to vote before the November 5th presidential election. "I am very excited that I will be able to vote," says Garcia, 57 years old. "We can express our voice, and more than anything, we can make ourselves count." In swing states such as Arizona, Nevada, and Pennsylvania, and large states such as California, the influence of Latino voters like Garcia could be key to choosing the next president in the race between former President Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. Newly naturalized citizens and an influx of young Latinos reaching the voting age of 18 boosted the estimated number of eligible Latino voters to 36.2 million in 2024, up from 32.3 million in 2020. A poll released in mid-October by Phoenix-based advocacy group Living United for Change in Arizona, and its acronym is LUSHA, and Data for Social Good shows that a majority of 1,028 registered Arizona voters surveyed between April and May are highly motivated to cast a ballot. While immigration remains important for many Latinos, the poll found they are also deeply concerned about the economy, healthcare access, and affordable housing. The findings track with results from national polls examining the issues Latino voters are thinking about less than a month before the election. The shifting demographics of Latino voters reflect the nuanced distinctions within an evolving population, often characterized as a monolithic voting bloc. "We are a diverse community with a wide range of political views, experience, and priorities," says Alejandra Gomez, executive director of LUCHA. Canvassers have been knocking on doors all over the state since March to encourage voters, Latinos in particular, to cast a ballot, and hopes are high that they will turn out en masse, says Stephanie Maldonado, managing director of LUCHA. "I definitely do see our community showing up and showing up big this November 5th, she adds. Garcia says he's looking forward to making his vote count. For years after coming to the U.S. from Mexico, he worked in construction. In the 1990s, he started his own landscaping business, which he still operates. These days, he worries about inflation because his earnings don't go as far as they used to when buying necessities. Prices have gone way up for food and gasoline and other items," he says. Garcia is hopeful the next president will take on issues related to the economy, but he also would like for the future commander-in-chief to push for immigration reforms. "What's needed," he says, "is an orderly, speedier process that gives eligible people already in the country or waiting to apply for U.S. asylum south of the border an opportunity to live here legally. People come here to improve their lives and to achieve the American dream, as I did, he says. Dustin Correa, who was born in Tucson, is among a generation of young Latinos coming of age in 2024. Soon after turning 18 in June, he registered to vote and is eager to cast a ballot. It feels like a big responsibility, he says. The issues motivating Correa to vote include his desire to elect politicians who ensure appropriate funding for public education, as well as after-school programs and other resources aimed at youth in the community. And he says there's a need for elected officials who can better address the impact of climate change, adding, "Those are the things that I care about, and I'm looking for leaders who can tackle them and create opportunities for the next generation." Correa is one of 1.3 million eligible Latino voters in Arizona. The state, along with California, Texas, Florida, and New York, is home to about two-thirds, or 65%, of all Latino-eligible voters in the country, according to the Pew Research Center. For Latinos and immigrant communities across the country, the stakes are high this election, says Nicole Melecu, executive director of the National Partnership for New Americans. The Coalition of Immigrant and Refugee Rights Organizations is working to encourage the nation's naturalized citizens to vote, especially in the fact of anti-immigrant attacks. For example, a slew of Republican campaign ads focuses negatively on immigrants. With the likes of Project 2025 looming about in the background, of family separation, and of attacks to our democracy, I think it was important for us to make sure that our communities, and naturalized voters especially, are aware of the power of their vote and their voice has to shape the outcome of this election, Melecu says. Project 2025 is a policy agenda of the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank that aims to radically restructure the federal government in a conservative administration. Experts caution that the project threatens voting rights and promotes a litany of anti-immigrant measures with far-reaching implications. Trump has distanced himself from the project, but he has made immigration a key part of the race. In one campaign stop after another, Trump's anti-immigrant rhetoric against immigrants punctuates his speeches. Should he win, he promises to quickly launch a mass deportation of immigrants living in the country without legal status, and even some with legal status. Instead of countering him with pro-immigration rhetoric, Harris has responded by taking a tougher stance on the issue, including a proposal to toughen asylum restrictions implemented by the Biden administration. She has also endorsed comprehensive immigration reforms. Trump blames Harris for a record number of migrants, many of them asylum seekers, entering the U.S. from Mexico, even as entries have declined sharply in 2024 amid policy changes on both sides of the border. In the border state of Arizona, the immigration debate is ever present. On November 5th, voters will reject or approve Proposition 314, which would give the state authority to enforce federal immigration policies. The initiative, Maldonado says, specifically targets immigrant communities and continues to push racial profiling, which we know is a top concern among the Latino community. And I think that this election for us is pushing back against policies that continue to criminalize our families and communities. Immigration hits close to home for Maldonado, who comes from a mixed-status family. She and her two siblings are U.S.-born citizens, and her father is a legal resident. However, her mother is undocumented, says Maldonado, and returned to Mexico some time ago. Her mother's departure was the catalyst for Maldonado to become more involved in electoral and civic matters. We need a permanent solution on immigration, not just for my family, but millions of families across the country and many diverse families that are living in these complexities of being separated, she explains. The Latino vote in the upcoming election could mean a shift in the usual narrative about the nation's second largest group of voters. Maldonado says, if we didn't have this much power, there wouldn't be so many attempts at trying to strip away our rights. She adds, we just need to come together and make it happen even greater this year. About the author, Lourdes Medrano is an independent journalist in southern Arizona, where she writes about immigration, underserved communities, the environment, and other matters of importance in both the U.S. and neighboring Mexico. A 2020-21 Knight Science Journalism Fellow at MIT, she has written for various publications, including The Washington Post, UnDark Magazine, The Atlantic, and Audubon Magazine. She speaks English and Spanish. Reach her via X, Twitter, direct message, or LinkedIn. Her name is Lourdes Medrano. Here's a reminder that you can get our stream and on-demand programs with our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. You are tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, listening to excerpts from Yes Media. The next article comes from the opinion section. This is Immigrants Prepare for the Worst Again. And the word again is in parentheses. This is written by Silky Shah, first published November 1st, 2024. There is a photograph at the beginning of this article. It shows six individuals walking along a pathway, a real wide pathway with a very, very tall wall beside them. And it appears that they're walking away from us into fog. When we read the caption, we see that they are asylum seekers walking along the U.S.-Mexico border fence near the Yacumba Hot Springs near San Diego. This was about a year ago. Despite campaign promises to pursue a pro-immigrant agenda, the Biden administration quickly retreated as Republicans, backed by sensational media coverage of the southern border, commandeered the narrative. With no countervailing impulse from the White House, the politics of immigration have moved alarmingly to the right, especially over the last year. Texas Governor Greg Abbott's strategy of busing migrants arriving at the border to sanctuary cities across the United States, among other ploys during the Biden years, has succeeded. Liberals have fallen into his trap. Democratic officials now scapegoat migrants as the reason why communities are struggling, rather than drawing attention to the weakened social safety nets and the failure of the federal government to provide basic needs to immigrants and non-immigrants alike. As support for immigration has waned, Donald Trump, in his most tried and true political move, has stoked a moral panic over rising migrant crime, fear-mongering, and pitting communities of color against each other to gain votes. Meanwhile, President Joe Biden has not only gone along with the narrative, but his administration has gutted the asylum system and outsourced immigration enforcement to Mexico, exacerbating the U.S.-manufactured crisis at the border and leading to more senseless deaths and precarity in the borderlands and beyond. Vice President Kamala Harris has followed the lead of the president she hopes to succeed. I have organized around immigration for over two decades, during which Democrats repeatedly succumbed to their opponents' playbook and positioned the issue as a national security and public safety issue. Yet even in this climate, there is no escaping how surreal this moment is. In Unbuild Walls, Why Immigrant Justice Needs Abolition, I write about how moral panics and so-called tough-on-crime policies have facilitated the expansion of immigrant detention. The Democrats' play on immigration feels akin to the Clinton era in the 90s, when Republicans took hold of Congress for the first time in decades. The 1994 crime bill, along with immigration laws passed by Congress in 1996, solidified the merger of the criminal legal and immigration enforcement systems, doubling the capacity of the immigrant detention apparatus. Later, during President Barack Obama's tenure, his administration expanded collaborations with local police and ramped up border enforcement to make the case for comprehensive immigration reform and a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. As a result, deportations skyrocketed, earning him the moniker Deporter-in-Chief. But as I write in the book, years of accepting border militarization and criminalization as a strategy to bring relief to innocent immigrants in the United States have only resulted in more dehumanization of migrants in general, thus creating more barriers to securing legalization for the 11 million undocumented people living here. Despite this lesson, many organizations are falling back into the good immigrant versus bad immigrant frame, or in this case, the old immigrant versus the new immigrant, making the case for some at the expense of others. It all feels incredibly bleak, but I try to remind myself that there have been numerous moments when anti-immigrant sentiment has ruled the political discourse only to retreat as movements fought back. California in the 90s after the passage of the harsh ballot measure Prop 187. The 2006 immigrant rights marches that brought millions to the streets in response to the post-9/11 immigration crackdown. And more recently, the boycotts of the state of Arizona protesting SB 1070, the Show Me Your Papers law that gave the state unconstitutional immigration enforcement authority. In some of our most dire political moments, immigrant communities, organizers, advocates, and ordinary people have stepped up to fight back, opening space for crucial movement victories. After the gut punch that was the 2016 election result, organizers and advocates have more seriously engaged in scenario planning. Sometimes these sessions only serve to cause more anxiety, but they have also been critical spaces to figure out how our movements can prepare. It is important to recognize that we have lost ground since the 2020 onset of the COVID-19 pandemic and the near simultaneous mass uprising for Black Lives, which produced significant leftward shifts on mass incarceration, policing, and immigration enforcement. Since then, the backlash has been building, and opportunities for major victories are now out of reach. In many ways, the current conditions require us to return to the basics of organizing and movement building. There are no easy solutions, and broadening the base of support is our best bet for combating the harmful narratives about immigrants and immigration. Since the release of Project 2025, much has been written about what a second Trump term would look like on immigration. His administration would strip status from millions of undocumented people who benefit from programs such as temporary protected status, which allows them to live and work in the United States. This would make them even more vulnerable to deportation. Along with local, state, and federal police forces, a second Trump administration plans to deploy the National Guard to round up immigrants already residing in the United States and warehouse them in detention camps across the country. The proposals conjure up images from World War II, when Japanese Americans were labeled enemies of the state and incarcerated in relocation centers. In addition to the full-on attack of immigrants currently living in the country, the plans include a more robust Muslim and African ban and other efforts to shut down the border to people seeking refuge. Other proposals that have been floated, such as ending birthright citizenship, are more outlandish and difficult to accomplish, but the intent is clear. Right-wing politicians have embraced the racist Great Replacement theory, and the goal is to end immigration as we know it. In the case of a Trump election win, demanding that the Biden administration dismantle the detention and deportation systems and rescind harsh border policies will be imperative. So far, Biden has received a pass from liberals and even some immigration advocates on his ramping up of enforcement, but the short period of time between the election and inauguration will require a united front to make Stephen Miller's dark agenda that much harder to implement. Once Trump is in office, there will no doubt be a relentless onslaught of executive orders requiring rapid response. Many will turn to litigation, but there are obvious limitations given the makeup of the courts. And if we want to build for the long term, it is critical that we invest in organizing and base building. It may seem difficult to imagine a Trump administration being affected by mass mobilization, But in 2018, after widespread public outrage, he ended the zero-tolerance policy separating families at the border. Separations continued, but not at the same scale. As immigrant communities are targeted, going local in our strategies will also take center stage to mitigate the harm of his administration. Creating spaces for sanctuary and community defense networks, limiting collaboration between police and ICE, ICE, and waging campaigns to prevent detention expansion will be essential to throwing a wrench in their plans. We must also create on-ramps for those newly engaged or returning to the fight, fortifying the movement to protect communities now and build for the future when there may be openings. As for Harris, her recent trip to the border made clear that she is positioning herself as tough on immigration and will continue to campaign around what both parties like to call border security. Depending on the makeup of the House and Senate, an immigration bill could move in Congress in 2025. The bipartisan Senate border bill proposed earlier this year and scuttled by Trump created a new floor for how much Democrats are willing to trade off to get something passed. Before this point, legalization for a large portion of undocumented immigrants was always on the table, but in this instance, the trade-off was more funding for military aid to Ukraine and Israel, and non-punitive reforms to the system were minimal. The border panic has divided the movement, but it's imperative for us to understand that anti-immigrant sentiment is driven in part by rampant and widening social inequality. Solidarity across movements for racial and economic justice and against U.S. militarism will be essential as we tackle the rightward lurch on immigration. Now is the time to offer an alternative approach, one grounded in a vision of a world without cages, that embraces the freedom of movement, one in which all our communities can thrive. In addition to border policy, we should anticipate a Harris administration to follow Biden's approach to interior enforcement. Despite Biden proclaiming 100 days into his presidency that there should be, quote, no private prisons, period, his administration is still contracting with private prison companies and expanding their use. As of this summer, ICE has put out feelers for at least 7 new detention centers in the Chicago, El Paso, Harlingen, Phoenix, Salt Lake City, San Francisco, and Seattle jurisdictions. Much as if Trump were to win, similar strategies of ending ICE and police collaborations and preventing detention expansion would be paramount. Already, sanctuary policies are being attacked as a moral panic is stoked over migrant crime. In an attempt to debunk these claims, many organizations have emphasized data showing that immigrants commit fewer crimes than do citizens. But this only serves to accept public safety as a metric for immigration and ends up throwing those with criminal records under the bus, effectively pitting working-class communities against each other. A better understanding of the criminal legal system and its intersection with immigration enforcement has helped the movement limit deportations. Given the backlash moment we're in, we must continue to challenge the whole system and not fall into the moral panic over crime. Just as concerning is how conservative states have acted under Biden, which we can expect to continue under a Harris administration. From Texas to Florida, states across the country are enacting some of the harshest anti-immigrant legislation we've ever seen. Through these efforts, such as Operation Lone Star and SB4 in Texas, states are commandeering state-level criminal legal systems to target and prosecute migrants, as well as people providing aid to migrants. SB4, for example, includes a 10-year minimum sentence for human smuggling or harboring undocumented immigrants. Governor Greg Abbott and Texas officials are essentially dictating immigration policy for the whole country. By filing lawsuits against forms of administrative relief, such as DACA, deploying its own deportation force, and busing migrants to sanctuary cities, Texas has gone on a rampage, and Biden has done very little to intervene. If Harris wins, the question remains whether, given her history as a state attorney general, she will be more likely to push back on Texas and other states. But based on her recent comments on immigration, it is clear that she will need to be pushed, and we need to prioritize building up grassroots capacity to protect immigrant communities and fight back in these states. The coming months will undoubtedly bring more heartache and confusion for immigrant communities. Regardless of who is president, educating people about their rights and expanding our base will be essential to building power towards a long-term change. Across the country, organizers and advocates are already planning for either outcome, hoping to be more prepared than we were in 2016. Dozens of organizations have gathered in multiple forums, such as Democracy 2025 and the Immigrant Movement Visioning Process, to develop strategies for preventing mass deportations if the worst were to happen. In this environment, abolition is a helpful tool for analysis and guidance. We must reject the reduction of immigrant lives to public safety and national security frameworks, and we must instead put forth a narrative of belonging and collectivity that helps bridge our struggles for racial and migrant justice. In this moment of political fervor, now is the time to start planting the seeds for a more grounded and accountable movement. This article was originally published by InQuest. It has been republished here with permission. This essay was written in the author's personal capacity. The views expressed are her own and do not necessarily represent the views of Detention Watch Network. About the author, Silke Shaw is the executive director of Detention Watch Network, a national coalition building power to abolish immigration detention in the United States. She is also the author of the book Unbuild Walls, Why Immigration Justice Needs Abolition, published Haymarket Books, 2024. You have been tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, listening to excerpts from Yes Media. From Flagstaff, I'm your volunteer reader, Deborah McFadder. Thanks a lot for listening.